This is The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay first aired on June 26, 1987.
Just a week ago, I saw a sorrel rail crossing the road. I'd never seen that happen before. The sorrel, you see, is an extremely shy 7-inch rail, a bird of the wetland fastnesses, so private and self-sufficient that it seldom leaves home, except in migration. What caused this untoward emigration was a simple matter of lowering water table. Its wetland was dry. As I wended my way to Oswego at midweek following, I couldn't help contrasting it with my Friday trip. The world was green again, and the wetlands, at least temporarily, are wet again. I remember thinking last Friday, as I visited several wetlands where I like to observe red-winged blackbirds and swamp sparrows or the waterfowl, it's so dry that it's nearing crisis proportions. For certain wetlands to operate safely, to maintain the rich diversity of life, a certain critical mass of water is essential. There are a number of reasons for this, all of which revolve around the fact that standing water from 6 inches to 18 inches in depth houses the productive heart of the wetland. It is here that the bewildering network of microorganisms, the algae, diatoms, desmids, flagellates, ciliates, rotifers, and myriad others, wax and wane. The names suggest the diversity and hint at the intriguing forms. This is a wetland subculture unseen and unappreciated by the casual observer. But its capacity to synthesize foodstuff from sunlight and common chemicals is legendary to those who study such things. In fact, it is this puree of life, not silt or mud, which lends the marsh water its greenish-brown color. And in these pea soup pastures is an amazing group of grazers, which convert carbohydrate to protein, forming a vital link in the food chain to nourish the minnows and aquatic insects so important to the wetland bird life during the nesting period. Amount and quality of water are extremely important to this vital unit of the wetland machinery. Dry seasons can produce disaster, even when the water does not completely disappear. In the aquatic community, life produces oxygen and death consumes it. The balance between the two is often very critical, because wetland waters can become very warm and warm water cannot retain oxygen reserves like cold water can. The life-death balance is like the scales of justice, where good needs to balance evil, or perhaps more like the teeter-totter, where two perfectly balanced children can swing up and down with minimum effort. Over time, however, if one grows more rapidly than the other, the balance is lost, and the heavier one must work increasingly harder as the imbalance grows to keep things swinging. Perhaps the easiest way to maintain the balance is to fatten up the lighter child. The life-death balance in the wetland is like that. As the weight of dead plant and animal material increases with the growing season, the amount of oxygen required to maintain the balance increases. Usually this is balanced by plant growth. In warm, dry weather, the problem grows because the oxygen holding and producing capacity of the water decreases and the toxicity of the water increases. When oxygen productivity drops below a critical point, there can be an explosion of death, which may even kill big fish, amphibians, and other aquatic life, and thereby deprive the more visible wetland life of its food supply. I was seeing evidence of that this last week as I examined some wetlands. Many had dried up, and this, of course, produces the ultimate deprivation. But others had begun to reek of death, even though they still had water. No herons waded their shallows. No kingfishers perched in overhanging snags surveying the pools. And a sorrel rail had to cross the road in search of fresher aquatic pastures. I shudder to think of what unfulfilled promises may have been left behind in that now impoverished wetland. Monday, the water supply and the oxygen supply was replenished, and the plant life showed its resiliency, just as your lawn does after a rain. A brood of mallards feeding in the replenished shallows and a moorhen searching through the vegetation for crustaceans showed that a residual of life remained even where it all had seemed lost. Just add water and stir. Another week or two, however, and the consequences would have been much more serious. Meanwhile, It may be too late this year for the Sora to recoup on its losses. But just to prove it's an ill wind that blows nobody good, next week I'll review a few of the positive influences of wetland drying and review a couple of thoughts about the significance of wetlands in preserving our water supply. And that's what I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.